Welcome to Small Biz Indie. I'm your host, Ryan Henry. Today my guest is Christian Tombers of Charlie Tango Productions and ThinkSales101.com. How are you doing today, Christian?
Ryan, I'm doing just great. Thanks for having me over today.
Absolutely. Christian, you work with sales representatives, both newcomers and seasoned veterans, and you do quite a bit of training throughout the Indianapolis area. Would you like to tell us a little bit more in detail about what you do and how you help?
Well, what I do is I teach marketing and sales coaching, primarily the sales, because I have about 40 years plus experience in different types of sales. And my philosophy is a little bit different than a lot of sales trainers, and that is that I teach don't sell, which sounds like an oxymoron because here I'm a sales trainer telling people not to sell. What I teach them is cause the customer to want to buy, because that's the whole premise of selling, is getting them to buy your product or service. And of course, the key is how do you get them to buy? If they don't want to buy, you don't want to shove it down their throat and then wind up having the cancellation beat you back to the office, because it doesn't do you, your company, or the customer any good anyway. And as you well know, bad news travels 10 times faster than the good news.
Absolutely. So Christian, what are some of the things that you do that help sales representatives cause customers to want to buy the product?
Well, starting with a simple philosophy that people buy things for two major reasons. And if you think about it, anything that you purchased in the last day, week, or month, or even year, you bought it in order to either avoid pain or gain pleasure or a combination of both. So if you put your mindset not to get the sale, but to get something that helps the customer avoid the pain or pleasure through the course of buying your product or service, that's the ideal way to go. So there's seven major reasons why people buy things. And those are save time, save money, pride and prestige, comfort and convenience, safety and security. Those are just a few of them. And I teach people how to break that down into their own business so that now they can come down with a true reason, true benefit why people buy a product or service.
So it's selling through benefit and solving a problem rather than here's the product and let me bore you with it.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. And a lot of sales training companies talk about the FAB method, F-A-B, which stands for features, advantages, benefits. But they don't really teach how to get down to the true benefit of owning one's product or service. And that's part of what I do in my training class also. I also found a lot of sales training companies out there have a lot of memorization involved. And you can memorize, you know, thousands of different rebuttals to different objections. And what happens if the rebuttal doesn't work? So I teach, what do you do when the rebuttal doesn't work? And sometimes it only takes one more question to get the sale. In fact, I can give you an example if you like.
Absolutely.
I was writing as an observer with a home improvement window salesperson one time, and he'd actually been through some national sales training classes, which he had passed, and he did a presentation and presented the price to the customer. Once he showed the customer the price, the customer's reaction was, oh my God, that's a lot of money. And immediately the sales rep came out with a paragraph they'd memorized from a national sales coach for a price objection. And the customer's response was, huh?
And so his objection wasn't with that it is a lot of money.
Apparently not. The whole thing came to a standstill. The sales rep didn't know what's the rebuttal when the rebuttal that you've memorized doesn't work. So I'm sitting there watching everything just come to a standstill. So I turned to the sales rep and said, do you mind if I ask your customer a quick question? He said, yeah, go ahead. And I pointed to the price on the kitchen table and looked at the customer and said, you know, Tom and Mary, I absolutely agree with you. That is a lot of money. How did you folks want to take care of it? Cash, check, Visa, MasterCard, Discover, combination, all at once, half now, balance upon completion. Which one of those works best for you? Next thing that happens, customer sat up straight and smiled and said, now I understand. Go ahead and put it all on my Discover card. I'll just pay it off right now. So when the salesperson heard that's a lot of money, in his mind, he took it as an objection. In reality, it was no more than a statement of fact. It's like there's the floor, there's the ceiling, and that's a lot of money. So it's a statement of fact.
So, but that teaching to a script and memorizing the script in that case would have significantly hurt, or in this case, prevented the sale from happening.
That's true. And there's nothing wrong with scripts. You have to have a guideline. You have to have a track, a pattern, a goal to go by. But you also need to learn what happens if you get set off course. Just like if I'm flying an airplane or even a sailboat, I've got a destination in mind. But there could be winds, there could be obstacles, there could be storms in the way, and I have to learn how to get around those and get back on track again.
So it's kind of a thinking on your feet and being able to improvise at the right time.
Precisely. And once people go through my class, they kind of get a feeling for how I think. And I've even had salespeople say, I got stuck and I just kind of figured, what would Christian do? And they thought what I might do based on the training that I'd given them, and they came up with what they thought was the right answer, and more times than not, it turned into a sale.
Excellent. So, Christian, over the years, you've trained a lot of sales representatives. What would you say was your most successful student or the most successful attendee that you've had?
Well, I've had several cases where people needed to learn about sales because it became part of their job, and they personally felt that they could not sell or they were not a salesperson type. And that comes from the stereotypical feedback they've been getting from TV and movies and things they read. And that's not the type of selling that I like to promote. I like to promote, as I said before, cause them to want to buy. And once they realize that they're really not a salesperson, they're more like an assistant buyer. They help the customer go through all their different choices and options and help the customer figure out what's going to be best for them. And I even teach people, if you do not have a solution for your customer, then thank them, ask them for referrals, and then move on.
So it's teaching people that you essentially work for the customer rather than just a representative of the company you're selling the products of.
Correct. It's always about the customer.
So the relationship is the most valuable part of the sales process.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because if a customer feels that they're quote-unquote being sold, they're going to give all kinds of resistance and not even give you the truthful answers to questions that you might have. And if they realize you're just there to help them get whatever works best for them, then you're more likely to get a sale. And even if you don't, you wind up maybe getting referrals or maybe the next product that they might need, they'll contact you first. You'll be the go-to person.
But it's setting the attitude that you're there to help the customer, not sell the customer something.
Precisely. I'm there to solve a problem. I've had customers greet me at the front door because I used to sell home improvement products myself, like replacement windows, and customers may have had some bad experiences in the past, and they even tell me right at the door, if you think you're going to get me to buy something tonight, we're not signing anything. One time I said, don't worry, Tom, Mary, that's the last thing I'd ever ask you to do, which it is the last. But they realize I can't force them anyway. And one time a customer said, well, before we even get started, I just want to know what your prices are. And I said, well, I'm not even interested in discussing price, because first we need to find out what it is that you want and need. Then I need to show you what's available to solve your problems, and then I'll let you decide what you think works best for your home. And then I'll leave you with some prices, fair enough. And then I get invited in and I do my presentation.
But you've established first that you're there to solve a problem for them. Mm-hmm. Then you talk about how you can solve.
Precisely, because selling is problem solving. It's helping people solve a problem. Because if you, as I said before, if you think of anything you purchased, it was usually to gain pleasure, avoid pain, which is problem solving, or maybe even a combination of both of those.
So all sales scenarios begin with consumers in its most basic form, that they're trying to gain something or prevent bad things from happening.
In 99.9% of the cases, exactly. Yep.
So once you've established that process, how would you go about putting your product in that light? I'm sure there's a lot of research that's involved with finding out what your product or service helps with people. Mm-hmm. So there's a long process that comes before you can even sell your product, correct?
It depends on the industry. When I sold home improvement products, we always did what's called a one-call close, and I'll talk about that a little bit more later. In other industries, you may have to have more than one appointment in order to get some research or get some information first, then do some research and bring that information back to the customer, see what's going to best work for them, whether it's your product or somebody else's product or whatever you have to offer. And it's always best to have the customer tell you what the problems are. A lot of sales trainers teach the salespeople that you need to create the need. And customers catch on to that. They realize that's a sales spiel. I'll give you a real-life example. When I sold replacement windows, most window companies teach their salespeople to show the customer how they're loose and rattle and need paint and putty and caulk, and you can slip a knife blade in there, pop it open, see how this dollar bill fits through the crack. That means you're losing heating and air conditioning and so on and so forth. I kind of flipped that around. When I went to the first window to measure it, I asked the customer, what do you like about your window? And they're saying, well, I don't like anything about it. That's why you're here. Oh, what is it that you don't like? And then I start taking notes, because now they're giving me their true pain points. And it becomes their truth and not my sales spiel. And then I can add more to that if I want to, but at least I cover the things that are most important to them, whether it be the safety, the security, the looks, the ease of clean, the fire protection, soundproofing, whatever it may be. So it could be different for different types of industries.
But when you ask the customer first what they're looking for, what they like, what they don't like, it allows you to customize your pitch to them in a way that you're addressing each of their concerns, wants, and needs one by one.
Yes, uh-huh. Absolutely. And it's always better to have communication with the customer rather than just bombard them with and dump on them with a presentation or a canned pitch, as it were. You have to know how to go with the flow, too.
So let's say in a scenario where a person's walking door to door, perhaps they sell business to business products. How would you walk somebody through the process of walking into the business and walking out more times successful than not?
Well, first of all, you need to do a little bit of research. So you're walking into the businesses who most likely are in need of whatever your product or service is. And then it's always good to make an appointment and meet with them face to face, because just dropping off a business card or brochure usually doesn't get you the sale, because that happens thousands of times and they just wind up either in a vertical file or in a drawer someplace. And the business owner needs to have a reason as to why they should have further conversation with you. So when I, for example, when I sold telephone directory advertising, I had an introduction that was less than 60 seconds and I got their attention, and I even told them, either sit down with me right now, we set another appointment, or you allow me to leave. So I actually give them permission to kick me out if they want to, and now they're willing to listen.
But giving the customer that out, or that feeling that they're in control, makes them less defensive against hearing anything, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. They become less defensive, because otherwise they're putting up their defenses, and then it's very difficult to bring them back down once that happens. Even when I sold home improvement products, I tell the customer, I'm going to show you what's available, I'm going to, you know, leave you some prices. If it works for you, great. Tell me to write it up. If it doesn't work, we'll smile, we'll shake hands, and we'll be friends. Fair enough.
And so hearing no is something that a lot of sales representatives hear more often than a yes. What kind of advice do you have for representatives when they're presented with a no?
Well, first of all, no can be heard a couple different ways. It could be heard as N-O, meaning, no, I'm really not interested in your product or service. And salespeople need to realize it's not themselves that are being rejected, it's whatever solution you offered is being turned down. But no can also be heard as K-N-O-W. They do not yet know enough that your product or service is going to solve their problems. If you know in your own heart and mind that what you have is going to fix their pain or get them pleasure, then what you need to do is give them additional information. There's a phrase out there that everybody's heard, the customer is always right. A lot of salespeople hate that, because if you're, what if they're wrong? They still get to be right? Well, think about it this way. The customer is always right based on the information that they had up to that point in time. Given some additional information, they could come up with a totally different solution or different answer and wind up buying your product or service as a result of that. It's kind of like if you met somebody who's been down a deserted island for the last 50 years and you ask him, is it possible a guy put his foot on the moon? Chances are, they say, no, it's silly, that's stupid, that never happened. So now if we show them videos and take them down to Cape Canaveral, Cape Kennedy, and introduce them to the astronauts and the whole NASA space program, then all of a sudden he's, oh, I didn't know that. Well, we just gave him additional information. Now if we ask him, is it possible guy put his foot on the moon? I said, yeah, I guess so.
So education is really the most important part of the sales process, is being able to educate the consumer or your customer or client on what your product is, how it solves their problems, and why they need it right now.
Precisely. And sometimes that's also referred to as consultative selling. So I'm really not in there as a salesperson. I'm there as a consultant or as an assistant buyer. I'm an expert in the industry. We'll make sure they get what's going to work best for their house. And if it turns out that what I have is not going to solve their problems, it's no sense in shoving it down their throat, because cancellation is just going to beat me back to the office, and that'll hurt everybody. I've even had customers who, my product, for example, replacing one that just wasn't right for their house, because they were in a historical district. Everything had to be according to historical standards. It couldn't be vinyl, which is what we sold. We sold vinyl replacement windows with insulated glass. They had to have real wood. Well, didn't matter what I said, they were not going to buy vinyl because of the historical district. While I was there, I gave them some advice at no charge as to what they should look for in buying wood windows and what type of brand to get that's going to maintain that historical look and qualify. And as a result of them giving information that didn't result in a sale for me, they gave me some referrals. And then one or two of those referrals can always turn into a sale.
But when you treat customers the right way, it works out for you long term. While you may not get the sale today, if you treat them well and with respect, then you're building your long term success, correct?
Precisely, yeah. You know, what goes around, what comes around, goes around, goes around, comes around. And if you treat people properly, they're going to help you be successful, because you're helping them be successful in whatever problems they're looking to solve. It's like the I really don't like the golden rule, because the golden rule says do unto others what you'd like to have done upon you. And there's some people out there really don't want them doing upon me what they'd like to have done upon them. So right. I prefer the platinum rule, and that is treat other people the way they would like to be treated. That's the platinum rule. And I treat my customers the same way. If I'm a homeowner, I don't want somebody coming in and telling me, you know, how bad everything is. Maybe I just spent, you know, all of last weekend getting everything just to condition that it's in right now.
So it's assuming that could really hurt that representative's chances as well, that a customer, you may upset them or say something that you shouldn't have said.
Precisely. And that's something I also teach. I teach some neurolinguistics, like the language that you use. Earlier, I gave an example where I asked the customer, how do you want to take care of this? Which would be better for you? Price, you know, cash, check, Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and so on and so forth. I could have said, how would you like to pay for it? Well, people don't like to pay for things. So the other phrase was, how would you like to take care of this? When I have a customer filling out an order form, I never call it a contract, because that legally is what it is. I never ask for a signature. I just ask for their go-ahead, their permission, permission to get started, their autograph right there on that line, whatever it is. They might say, you mean my signature? I'll say yes, but as a game, I never use that word. So I teach some neurolinguistics. Using the proper language in front of the customer can also keep things in a positive note. And something else I want to mention, a lot of salespeople only talk about their own product. They need to realize the customers, with the internet now, they can find out anything they want. So when I discuss the options, I discuss the other options without knocking them, because they're all reputable companies, and, you know, for the grace of God, I could be working for one of them myself. And so they're all good companies, and they're all possible choices. But one choice a lot of salespeople leave out, and that is leave things the way they are.
Now, that's something that you've mentioned before in the many times we've had discussions, that there's one company that's winning 80% of the no's any sales representative gets. Mm-hmm. That's correct?
Yeah. In fact, there was a study done. It was about 40 years ago. In fact, it was a major window company. They wanted to know who their biggest competitor was so they could train their salespeople how to sell against that competition. So what they did is they went back and checked with 100 homeowners who 12 months ago, a year earlier, had received a quote and did not buy. They wanted to find out a year later, whose window did you actually wind up putting in your house? And they found that 80% bought from one source, 20% bought from a whole bunch of sources. And the company said, well, I don't care about the 20%. Who's that one that 80% of our customers or potential customers that didn't buy from us went to? And that was a company called Do Nothing At All. A year later, 80% of the homeowners still had not put windows in their house from any brand, and we're still having the same pain that they had when they first had us come in a year ago.
So that brings us back to the point of, when you're in sales, you really have to follow up with your prospects.
Yes, and that study also created something else that a lot of sales companies are missing, and that is they realize that if we don't get that order that night, there's less than a 20% chance that over the next year anybody's going to get the business. So the sales managers and the owners of those companies told their salespeople, you got to do whatever it takes to get the order that night. And most people know that as a one-call close. In other words, you got to do it tonight. We'll give you $300 off if you do it tonight. Customer says, hey, that sounds great. I'll let you know tomorrow morning. And the rep says, oh, no, not tomorrow morning. It's got to be tonight while I'm here. And very often the homeowner then says, well, if I can't at least sleep on it overnight, what's going to change in 8 hours? Let me show you the door. And the sales rep gets kicked out the door. So I developed a technique that I've tested and proven, where the customer has a totally different response. And most salespeople are not taught how to do this. And the response from the customer then is, yeah, I should get a discount if I buy from you tonight. What'd you have in mind? So it's a very simple technique, and people can apply it almost immediately. Now, that doesn't mean that every single customer is going to buy from you. Except, I'll give you an example, in the home improvement industry, if somebody has a 30-35% closing rate, that means they are issued 10 appointments to come back 3 or 3.5 sales out of the 10, they're actually doing pretty good. And through the techniques that I teach, somebody can bring their closing percentage up to 40 or even 50%, which I've personally done and exceeded because of these techniques. And this is not something that is complicated or difficult, it can be applied immediately.
And this is a technique that both new people to sales as well as veteran sales reps could pick up on and implement this for their own products and services.
Absolutely. You'd be surprised how many veteran sales people would, gosh, I wish somebody would have taught me this a lot sooner. I would have had a lot more sales, made a lot more money. Because typically salespeople go to their manager and say, how do I make more money? Well, it's a numbers game. All I got to do is run more appointments. You know, and the problem is you run out of days and times and hours and still got to sleep and have time with your family. So what I teach is, how do you make better use of the appointments that you already have? So run the same 10 appointments, but come back with 4 or 5 sales instead of only 3 or 4.
Excellent. And Christian, I understand you teach a monthly sales training that's an entire afternoon packed with information. Would you like to tell us more about it?
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. It is a training class that runs from 1 o'clock to 5 o'clock. It's 4 hours. It's the first Wednesday of the month, so the next one coming up is first Wednesday of October, and it'll be the first Wednesday of the month after that also. And it's at the First Merchants Bank on the north side in Westfield. And it is a class, I call it basic sales. It's good for anybody. Even professional salespeople found they not only got some a refresher course out of it and got reminded of a lot of things that they've forgotten because they've been in sales for so long, but they also learned some new techniques they can add to their portfolio. It is also good for people that are brand new into sales, or somebody's looking to get into a sales position, or even if just somebody wants to learn a little about sales so they can put their marketing plan, their business plan, their literature, their brochures together. So it's quite comprehensive. And I give my customers that come to that class a monkey back guarantee.
A monkey back guarantee.
Yeah, I didn't misspeak. It's actually a monkey back guarantee. It usually gets people's attention when I say it that way. And that is, the monkey is on my back to make sure you get your money's worth. The class is $59.97, except if you let me know in advance, contact me by email, telephone, text message, or whatever, then the price is only $49.97.
And this is for a full afternoon of sales training, not just a 1 or 2 hour class.
No, this is 4 hours. It's pretty intensive. And so far, nobody's wanted their money back, so maybe I should raise my prices.
Well, if anything, it means that attendees really feel that they're getting their money's worth from the class.
And that's what my goal is, make sure they walk out of there knowing that it was time well spent. And I made it a 4-hour marathon class because some people just don't have the time to come back to 4 1-hour classes over and over and over again because of time, the travel, getting back and forth, and all that sort of thing. So we just do it all in one time. So you are bombarded with a fire hose worth of information. And I do hand out all kinds of notes and handouts and resources and things to the class that they can take home with them too.
So they get physically something they can take away and reference later.
Absolutely. And they take all the notes they want. If they want a copy of my PowerPoint afterwards, that's fine too. All the information I have, by the way, full disclosure, is available somewhere on the internet. And just about every sales trainer that's been out there learned from some other sales trainer who learned from some other sales trainer all the way back to whenever.
So, Christian, who were some of your influences in sales training?
Well, I've met some of the national sales trainers. I met Dave Yoho. He's specific for the home improvement industry. I've met Tom Hopkins. I've met Tony Robbins. I've met some motivational speakers like Zig Ziglar and Dr. Wayne Dyer, who unfortunately passed away a couple of years ago. I've met Tom Hopkins, who was my first sales trainer. In fact, the person that got me started in sales was a representative for Tom Hopkins Products. And back then, they had a cassette tape set of 12 cassettes. Some of you may still remember what those are. And it was $150. And I said, I really don't have $150. And the guy said, I'll tell you what, I'll let you borrow these for 30 days. You listen to them as many times as you want. I don't care if you copy them. 30 days from today, we're going to meet and either give the tapes back to me or you pay me the $150. A month later, I gave him the $150. I still have those tapes to this day. It was that valuable, and that's some of the material that I also teach, in addition to other national trainers. So I take a lot of their materials and combine it into what I do and help people think outside the box.
So it's assembling a good 360-degree what you should do or what you should apply to your own sales.
Mm-hmm, precisely. And for some reason, I've just got a knack for being very creative and being able to think outside the box, even in industries with products that I haven't sold. Recently, I had a student in my 4-hour class who was a realtor, and I gave him an idea. I said, Jewish, I wish I would have known that 4 weeks ago. I'd have gotten another sale. And I'd never sold real estate before, but my idea applied to whatever he had going on at the time. And it's just a matter of, sometimes it's just one extra question that gets you the sale. Give you another example, if I may.
Yeah.
I had a company have me ride with a sunroom salesperson. They were selling $25,000 to $35,000 sunrooms. And the salesperson did his presentation at the customer's kitchen table, presents the price. Customer said, oh, that's a little better than we thought it was going to be. Do you mind if we talk in private for a moment? We'll get back to you. So I was with a home improvement salesperson, and he was selling $25,000 to $35,000 sunrooms. And he presents the price on the kitchen table to the homeowners, and they say, well, it's better than we thought it was going to be. Do you mind if we talk in private for a moment, and we'll come back with a decision? Less than 2 minutes later, they came back to the table and said, "We're done shopping. We're going with you guys. We like your company. We like your product. We like your price. We like you guys," meaning us, the salespeople sitting there. "And your sunroom's going on our house." The salesperson knows I was observing, pulls out the order form, starts to fill it out, and the customer's, "Oh, no, no, hold on, not yet, not yet." "Oh, why not? I thought everything was a go." "Well, we just don't have the money right now, but leave us your brochure and your business card, and we'll let you know. But we promise you'll be the one." Most salespeople roll their eyes, "Yeah, okay, they're just trying to let me off easy." So he leaves the business card and the brochure. We're starting to leave the house. So I turned to the sales rep and said, "Before we leave, do you mind if I ask your customer one more question?" He figured he lost a sale, they don't have any money. "Go ahead." So I turned to the customer and said, "When he said earlier that you can't afford to do it right now, what did you mean by that?" Customer said, "Well, it's Saturday afternoon. I'm not going to write you a check that's going to bounce. The banks are closed. I got to go bank Monday and do a transfer. So I don't write you a bad check." And then I said, it would be okay for us to save some time, a trip, another appointment. We just go ahead and do all the paperwork today. I'll personally hold your check to like Wednesday or Thursday and call you first to make sure the transfer went through." Customer said, "Oh, you can do that?" We sat back down and wrote the order. Excellent. So there's another example where the salesperson in their mind figured customer doesn't have any money. And in reality, money just wasn't liquid. And that's something that I teach, is how to think outside the box. In fact, I do a inspirational, motivational presentation that I can also do for lunch and learns and for events and as a keynote speaker, called "The Conversation in Your Mind Can Make You Deaf and Make You Blind." Because that happens very often with salespeople, where they will interpret something the customer says and it's really not the whole truth. And it could be either auditory, something that you hear and you're not hearing everything really that's what's being said, or maybe even something that you see. Some of you out listening to this podcast may have heard of the little thing about the arrow on the FedEx truck. Children who do not know how to read and they know the shape of an arrow can find the arrow almost immediately. People who know how to read are sometimes distracted by the letters and can't find the arrow. Now, once they see it, they'll never look at that logo the same way again.
Right.
In fact, my daughter, when she was about 4 years old, made me aware of some subliminal advertising that never dawned on me. And what happened is we took her to a motel when she was like 4 years old. It was a weekend getaway for the family. And it was in the wintertime. We went to a motel chain called Super 8. And what was interesting about it is they promised that their heated indoor pool was going to be open and operational in the wintertime. And my daughter, being 4 years old, thought it was so cool you actually go swimming indoors in the wintertime. So we made a big deal out of that weekend trip. Months later, we're driving down the freeway, and here long at night, we see the big logo from Super 8 on the side of the road. And my daughter points out and says, "Hey, Mom, Dad, look, Super 8, Super 8. And I'm going, "Whoa, that's subliminal advertising. I never thought it was Super 8.
But it's the way that they've designed the logo, so it's perceived.
Yeah. I wonder if even people that work for the company know that's what happened. So there's a lot of that out there, and I look for those type of things. And that's also trains my brain to look for things that the customer says, well, maybe that's not really what they mean. Like, it's not they don't have any money, it's just not liquid right now. It's not that they've got a problem with the price. They just acknowledge, yeah, that's a lot of money.
So sometimes asking that one last question really can turn what the sales rep perceives as a no into a yes, mm-hmm. and complete the sale.
Yep. And I've even used a technique that some of you that are experienced salespeople might have used. It's called the Dutch Uncle Close. You don't get the sale. You can't figure out why they didn't buy. And right before you leave, you say, I appreciate you allowing me in your home tonight, and what I'd like to do, and I know that this doesn't work for you, but what could I have done differently to get your business tonight? Now all of a sudden they're like on a pedestal, "Well, let me teach you how to sell, and now I should tell you how to sell them."
So it's the customer wanting to feel that in control that means the success between sale and no sale.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. A technique that I used in the home improvement industry very successfully, so the customer felt that they were in control, because they were kind of in control because I allowed them to be in control. What I would do once I was ready to, before I even presented the price, I'd ask the customer, what would be the one thing that would stop you from committing today to having this window installed in your house right now? And I'm using words like commit now in front of a customer, which a lot of salespeople don't want to use those kind of words. And usually the number one answer is, well, the money. And I just repeat the same thing. Oh, I appreciate that. Other than money, what would be the one thing that would stop you from committing today to have this product installed at your house right now? And typically, most of the time, I said, well, no, that'd be the only thing. So now I know all I had to do is make it affordable. I had to fit it into their budget. And the second answer I typically got is, well, we never make a decision the same day. Well, you can't tell the customer the fact that you're deciding to not make a decision today is already a decision. So nanny, nanny, boo-boo, I caught you making a decision anyway. You can't really say that because that gets kicked out of the house.
Right.
So what I would say, well, I appreciate that. So other than money and obviously not making a decision the same day, what would be the one thing to stop from committing today to have this product installed in your house right now? And they realize how that didn't make a lot of sense, so they go back to money. So really all I need to do is make it affordable, fit it into their budget. And there are three, and we discussed this in training also, three major objections that most salespeople hear. And one of them is shop around, the other one's think it over, and the third one is too much money. And too much money is where a lot of salespeople get caught on, because there are two different ways too much money could be interpreted. Is it too much for you? In other words, your budget? You think it's a fair price, you just don't have the money to pay for it. Or is it too much for the product? You could afford to pay three times as much, you just don't think the product's worth it. So do I need to make it affordable, or do I need to justify my price? And sometimes you can just simply be answering the wrong question.
So it comes back to that asking the question, making sure that the prospect turned customer participates in the process. Mm-hmm.
And very often, sometimes a very simple question is, if they say something, say, could you elaborate on that? What did you mean by that?
But the customer's glad to elaborate.
Yeah. It is important to allow the customer to speak. And obviously, a lot of salespeople, they want to get through their pitch or their presentation or their canned presentation talk that they have, and the customer never gets to put in a word edgewise, and you might not actually get down to the true reason why your product or service could be a benefit to them.
So they're just talking over any potential to get the sale.
Mm-hmm. Right. And some salespeople, I notice this with a lot of experienced salespeople, they have collected so much information about their product, their service, or company over the years that their presentations got longer and longer and longer. And they're in the customer's home or they're in the customer's office for 2-3 hours, and some people don't want to sit through a movie that's more than 90 minutes. So how do you do that? Well, you go back to the basics. And I've done that quite often with experienced salespeople, took them back down to the original 12-page flip chart and all that extra material I told them, keep in the back seat of your car. It'll be there if you need it. And guess how many times I actually had to pull it out?
Not many.
Not many, if at all. Yeah. But it was there. You know, it's like having Dumbo's magic feather. It was there if you needed it.
So really, it's the basics that you need to provide. So the core foundation of what makes your product what it is, why it's beneficial to the customer, and then give the customer plenty of opportunity to raise their objections or to express what they need in the product before you go through and give this long presentation.
Yeah, precisely. It's all a matter of gathering information and then using that information to help the customer solve their problems. And a lot of salespeople are taught how to handle objections, and that's always a real heavy thing. It sounds like a lot of mental stress to have to handle an objection. So what I teach is welcome the objections. Because if somebody has an objection, chances are they're interested in your product. If they had no objections, then there's no need or no interest.
So they weren't paying attention if they have zero objections.
They weren't paying attention, they had no need, they're just letting you sit there, talk. And if they have an objection, that actually means that there's an interest. Because would you have an objection on something that you don't want and need anyway?
Probably not.
Probably not. So welcome the objections. Objection is actually a buying signal.
So it's an opportunity to win the sale.
Mm-hmm. Precisely.
Yep. Excellent. So I know you've mentioned research being a very important step in turning prospects into customers. What methods or tactics would you recommend sales reps use to find and research who would best fit their product or service?
Well, depending on your industry, you never know exactly what you're going to run into with each individual customer, because you want to keep everything custom for their particular need. So the thing to do is do some generic research. One is go to the trade shows. There's companies out there, they'll tell those salespeople, we don't want you looking at the competitors. Well, if you don't know anything about the competitors, how can you be an assistant buyer to your customer if you don't know what the competitors have? So when I was a manager, sales manager for all the companies I worked for, I always told my salespeople, I want you to go out there and check out the competition. I want you to see what they have. I want you to go to the trade shows. And if they have something that's better than what we have, you're not going to feel comfortable selling our product anyway. So maybe you should be working for them anyway.
So it's an opportunity to compare what your product has over the competition's product so that you're able to present a better argument.
Precisely. And that also allows you to get a sale when the customer says, let's say you show up at their office at the door and says, well, we don't do anything until we get at least three bids. And you're number one. Now what? How are you going to
But then that's where you could come in and essentially give three different companies solutions to their need and then walk out the winner.
Yep. And in some cases, I even showed the customer. I didn't have necessarily to go through the time of it to show them. I can show you seven or eight or nine different options that are out there for you and which one of these works best for you. And a lot of times they'll say, well, which one is yours? And that's actually a compliment if I kept it so generic that they didn't even know which of those choices are mine. And before I answer which one's mine, I ask, well, if money was not an issue, which one would you want? Nine times out of ten, they point at my product.
But it's the fact that you helped them arrive at wanting your product, not pushing your product on them.
Correct. I was, again, an assistant buyer, and if it turns out that the other product was a better solution for them, they're going to thank me for that and maybe reward me in a different way. It could be through referrals or through other business or who knows what it might be. You never know.
So maintaining your integrity is critical to success in sales.
Integrity is everything.
As someone who's attended your class, you explained a little bit about the relationship and the difference between what marketing and sales are, that they are important to each other, but they're not the exact same thing. Can you elaborate a little more about that?
Yeah, actually, I keep it kind of simple, so it's not a PhD college course difference. Marketing is getting people to know who you are, what you have to offer, what some of the benefits are of owning your product, how to find you, how to get the product. And sales is getting them to own it. There's an old phrase that some of the older generation may still remember. You build a better mousetrap and the world will beat a path to your door. Well, it's only if they know that you have the better mousetrap, if they know that that better mousetrap would serve them and their needs, and how to find you in that mousetrap. Otherwise, how can they beat a path to your door? So that's marketing. And then selling them is to get them to know how they can actually own that product, how we can make it affordable, how we can show them a return on their investment, how they realize that buying this product is going to give them a slew of different benefits, not just one or two. And in one of the classes I do on the seven benefits, I've actually had companies who would immediately pick two out of the seven. Yeah, that's us. And once we're done with the workshop, they've got five or six or maybe even all seven. And they go back and redesign their literature brochures because everybody in the industry would have picked those two. Very few would have picked the additional. So now they can actually stand out from their competition.
So you've been able to help some people completely revamp their marketing into a process that makes the sale much easier.
Precisely, yes.
Mm-hmm. So there is a very close relationship that your marketing and sales team should work together very closely.
Oh, absolutely, yep. Because if they're not congruent with each other, there's going to be clashing and it just won't make sense to the customer. Well, they're saying this and you're saying that, and how does that work?
And Christian, I know with your basic sales training class that you've also mentioned that this is something that would work for job seekers as well. Can you explain why and what your class benefits to people looking for a job rather than just a sales representative?
Well, there's a couple things along those lines. First of all, I do some pro bono speaking. I speak for Passport to Employment at Church of the Crossing about once a year, and for BPE, Business and Professional Exchange, about twice a year. They're both job clubs and groups for people to get together to network about finding jobs, writing resumes, how to interview, that sort of thing. And the presentation I do for them is how do sales techniques apply to people in career transition. Once they complete my class, there is no unemployment in that room. Everybody is, in fact, employed. And they all now have different ways and techniques on how to get the sales job. So I offer two different programs for people that are in career transition. And one is for them to learn how to sell. It's a basic class, so at least they've got some basics down so they can pass the interview to get the job that said help wanted, no experience necessary, we'll train you. But you still want to have, you know, a little bit on the balls to get that job. The other program is how to sell yourself to the employer, how to actually get the job, whether it's a sales job or any other type of job. And ultimately, you are the product. The employer is the customer. And any employer, he or she, will be asking themselves the same question you and I ask ourselves as consumers, what's in it for me to hand you my money?
So essentially, it's making the employer want you as the product.
Mm-hmm. Cause them to want to hire me. Cause them to want to buy.
Excellent. So, Christian, what advice do you have for somebody who's considering a job in sales, or even someone who is still fairly new in sales? What advice do you have for them?
Well, first of all, sales is not scary. It's not the stereotypical stuff you see in the TV and the newspapers and the radio and the books and magazines and stuff. It is very simply you're helping people solve a problem. So it's problem solving. And whether you're brand new to the industry or you're already experienced, it's always good to take refresher courses and classes. Even I myself, when I have an opportunity, I will take sales classes where they're asking me, wait a minute, Christian, you could teach the class. Why are you taking it? Well, because I want to hear somebody else's version. And sometimes hearing something a different way or hearing a new story or new way of explaining or describing something can add to my own portfolio. And also, there's a phrase out there, you learn through making your mistakes. I'm not going to live long enough to make all my own mistakes. So it's a lot better for me to learn from somebody else's mistakes. And that's what I also have to offer. I've made my mistakes. I've had my failures. And I can teach my class failures that I've had and how I overcame those and turned those into successes.
But failure is inevitable at some point, especially in sales, correct?
And it all depends on if you want to look at it as failure. You know, if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at will change. Failure is an opportunity to learn, to advance, to grow. Failure is sometimes also an opportunity for us to develop our sense of humor. A lot of times when things go wrong, a couple of months later, you're laughing about it. So why not just laugh sooner?
Good point. Mm-hmm. And so, Christian, when is your next sales training class?
Well, the next one is going to be the first Wednesday in October, which is October 4th. It's from 1 o'clock to 5 o'clock at the First Merchants Bank in Westfield, Indiana, which is north of Indianapolis. So for those of you Southsiders, I found out you do not need a passport. You can go up there without one. And if I get enough demand for people on the south side of Indianapolis or far east or far west, I'll actually set up sales training classes in those areas if that makes it more convenient. Or if you have a company with a larger staff, we can do the training right at your own office in your own sales room, boardroom, or go to a local restaurant and do it there. And the fee for that is $49.97 if you let me know in advance. And I can be reached on my cell phone, area code 317-523-3253. That's 317-523-3253. And I can also be reached by email, which is crtombers, T-O-M-B-E-R-S, tombers at gmail.com. And the best thing to do when you send me an email is also send me a text to give me a heads up to look for your email, because there's a lot of business people, we get like 200-300 emails a day, and sometimes they can get lost, so it'd be better to do that way. I'm also in the process of setting up an Eventbrite page so that people can just register on Eventbrite and pay me that way, or they can pay when they get to the class at the door. And like I said, I still offer the monkey back guarantee. If you don't think you got your money's worth, you either get a refund or you don't have to pay me.
Excellent. And Christian, you also host a weekly networking group. Would you like to tell us more about that as well?
Sure, thank you. As a matter of fact, I host two of them. One is Power Circle Network, and that is also at the First Merchants Bank in Westfield. It's 9 o'clock in the morning every Friday. There is no membership fee. There's no attendance requirement. We don't have industry exclusives, which I actually found out to be pretty good, because sometimes if there's competitors, they have specialties, and one helps the other one out with what they don't like to do. And First Merchants Bank graciously offers us complimentary refreshments, so we don't have to pay for that. And that's every Friday morning at 9 o'clock. I'm also currently president for third year in a row of Noblesville Marketing Group. And if you go to noblesvillemarketinggroup.com, there's a calendar there, because we are every other Friday at 7 o'clock at Jim Dandy Restaurant in Noblesville. And that meeting is also free at no charge. And it is every other Friday, so that's why it's good to look at the calendar. So it'll be coming up this week, Friday. But those of you that are listening to the podcast later, just go to noblesvillemarketinggroup.com and you can look up the calendar there and see when the next meeting is. And there's no charge for that either. And you don't have to buy anything, although it's 7 o'clock in the morning. Most people will just get some coffee.
It's time for breakfast. Well, Christian, thank you so much for joining us today. I'd like to thank you for sharing some of your great knowledge with us. And for those of you listening, we will see you with our next episode soon. Find everything for your business in our Small Biz Marketplace. Visit henrymg.com/marketplace and save 10% off your first order with promo code SmallBizIndy. This podcast is produced by Henry Marketing Group of Indianapolis, Indiana. Get new episodes automatically on your preferred listening device by subscribing to Small Biz Indy in iTunes, Google, or on our website, henrymg.com/smallbizindy. For information on today's guest, or to be a guest on Small Biz Indy, send us an email, info@henrymg.com.